We're starting chapter 19 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Hungarian Horntail.
Mm-hmm. I know what that is.
What's that?
It's a dragon.
Dragon?
Yep.
For what?
For the first challenge.
That would be dangerous.
Yep, it is.
The prospect of talking face to face with Sirius was all that sustained Harry over the next fortnight. The only bright spot on...
Is it fortnight? 2 weeks.
Yep. The only bright spot on a horizon that had never looked darker. The shock of finding himself school champion had worn off slightly now, and the fear of what was facing him started to sink in. The first task was drawing steadily nearer. He felt as though it were crouching ahead of him, like some horrific monster barring his path. He had never suffered nerves like these. These were way beyond anything he had experienced before a Quidditch match. Not even his last one against Slytherin, which had decided who would win the Quidditch Cup. Harry was finding it hard to think about the future at all. He felt as though his whole life had been leading up to, and would finish with, the first task. Admittedly, he didn't know how Sirius was going to make him feel any better about having to perform an unknown piece of difficult and dangerous magic in front of hundreds of people. But the mere sight of a friendly face would be something at the moment. Harry wrote back to Sirius saying he would be beside the common room fire at the time Sirius had suggested, and he and Hermione spent a long time going over plans for forcing any stragglers out of the common room on the night in question. If the worst came to worst, they were going to drop a bag of dung bombs. They hoped they wouldn't have to resort to that. Filch would skin them alive. In the meantime, life became even worse for Harry within the confines of the castle. For Rita Skeeter had published her piece about the Triwizard Tournament, and it had turned out not to be so much a report on the tournament as a highly colored life story of Harry. Much of the front page had been given over to a picture of Harry. The article, continuing on pages 2, 6, and 7, had been all about Harry. The names of the Beauxbatons and Durmstrang champions, misspelled, had been squashed into the last line of the article, and Cedric hadn't been mentioned at all. The article had appeared 10 days ago, and Harry still got a sick, burning feeling of shame in his stomach every time he thought about it.
I've totally felt that, too.
You know, this is the exact situation where you write a letter to the editor, you know?
Honey, he's 13/14, I don't know.
Yeah? You telling me 13-year-olds can't write a letter to...
I'm saying 14-year-olds, they're 14 and he has no parents. You'd write a letter to the editor. It'll make it seem worse. Besides, leave poor Harry alone.
Rita Skeeter had reported him saying an awful lot of things he couldn't remember ever saying in his life, let alone in that broom cupboard. "I suppose I'd get my strength from my parents," she wrote, as he said. "I know they'd be very proud of me if they could see me now. Yes, sometimes at night I still cry about them. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I know nothing will hurt me during the tournament because they're watching over me." But Rita Skeeter had gone even further than transforming his errs into long, sickly sentences. She interviewed other people about him, too. Harry has at last found love at Hogwarts. His close friend, Colin Creevy, says that Harry is rarely seen out of the company of one Hermione Granger, a stunningly pretty muggle-born girl who, like Harry, is one of the top students in the school.
At least it makes her sound good.
Yeah, she does make...
Keep going.
From the moment the article had appeared, Harry had to endure people, Slytherins mainly, quoting at him as he passed, making sneering comments. "Want a hanky, Potter, in case you start crying in Transfiguration?" "Since when have you been one of the top students in school, Potter? Or is this school you and Longbottom have set up together?" "Hey, Harry." "Yeah, that's right," Harry found himself shouting, as he wheeled around in the corridor, having had just about enough. "I've been crying my eyes out about my dead mum, and just about to, off to do some more." "No, it was just you dropped your quill." It was Cho. Harry felt the color rising in his face. "Oh, right, sorry," he muttered, taking the quill back. "Good luck on Tuesday," she said. I really hope you do well." Mm-hmm. Which left Harry feeling extremely stupid. Hermione had come in for her fair share of unpleasantness, too, but she hadn't yet started yelling at innocent bystanders yet. In fact, Harry was full of admiration for the way she was handling the situation. "Stunningly pretty, her," Pansy Parkinson had shrieked the first time she'd come face to face with Hermione after Rita's article had appeared. What was she judging against, a chipmunk? "Ignore it," Hermione said in a dignified voice, holding her head in the air and stalking past the sniggering, slithering girls as though she just couldn't hear it. "Just ignore it, Harry." But Harry couldn't ignore it. Ron hadn't spoken to him at all since he had told him about Snape's detentions. Harry had half hoped they would make things up during the 2 hours they were forced to pickle rats' brains in Snape's dungeon, but that had been the day Rita's article had appeared, which seemed to have confirmed Ron's belief that Harry was really enjoying all the attention. Hermione was furious with the pair of... Hey, Hermione, I think, would be the one that would write the letter to the, you know... Or she would get Rita fired.
Or Dumbledore.
Why Dumbledore?
He's a professional wizard who knows that those things aren't true.
Yeah, but what is? But he didn't publish the article. He hasn't run the press.
I know. I said he'd get her fired.
Oh, he would get her fired. Yes, he should. For sure.
What did you say that I meant?
I thought you meant Hermione could get Dumbledore fired.
No.
Anyways, Hermione was furious with the pair of them. She went from one to the other, trying to force them to talk to each other, but Harry was adamant. He would talk to Ron again, only if Ron admitted that Harry hadn't put his name in the Goblet of Fire, and apologized for calling him a liar.
That's fair.
That is fair. I didn't start this, Harry said stubbornly. It's his problem. You miss him, Hermione said impatiently, and I know he misses you. Miss him, said Harry. I don't miss him. But this was a downright lie. Harry liked Hermione very much, but she just wasn't the same as Ron. There was much less laughter and a lot more hanging around in the library when Hermione was your best friend. Harry still hadn't mastered summoning charms, but he seemed to have developed something of a block about them, and Hermione insisted that learning the theory would help. They consequently spent a lot of time poring over books during lunch times. Victor Crumb was in the library an awful lot, too. Harry wondered what he was up to. Was he studying, or was he looking for things to help him through the first task? Hermione often complained about Crumb being there, not that he ever bothered them, but because groups of giggling girls often turned up to spy on him from behind the bookshelves, and Hermione found the noise distracting. He's not even good-looking, she muttered angrily, glaring at Crumb's sharp profile. They only like him because he's famous. They wouldn't look twice at him if he couldn't do that wonky faint thing. Ronsky faint, said Harry through gritted teeth. Quite apart from liking to get quidditch terms correct, it caused him another pang to imagine Ron's expression if he could have heard Hermione talking about wonky faints. Should we stop there? Okay. It's a strange thing, but when you're dreading something and would give anything to slow time down, it has a disobliging habit of speeding up. The days until the first task seemed to slip by as though someone had fixed the clocks to work at double speed. Harry's feeling of barely controlled panic was with him wherever he went, and as ever-present as the snide comments about the Daily Prophet article. On the Saturday before the first task, all students in the third year and above were permitted to visit the village of Hogsmeade. Hermione told Harry it would do him good to get away from the castle for a bit, but Harry didn't need much persuasion. What about Ron, though? He said. Don't you want to go with him? Oh, well, Hermione went slightly pink. I thought we might meet up with him in the Three Broomsticks. No, said Harry flatly. Oh, Harry, this is so stupid. I'll come, but I'm not meeting Ron, and I'm wearing my invisibility cloak. Oh, all right then, Hermione snapped, but I hate talking to you in that cloak. I never know if I'm looking at you or not. So Harry put down his invisibility cloak in the dormitory, went back downstairs, and together he and Hermione set off for Hogsmeade. Harry felt wonderfully free under the cloak. He watched other students walking past them as they entered the village, most of them sporting Support Cedric Diggory badges, but no horrible remarks came his way for a change, and nobody was quoting that stupid article. People keep looking at me now, said Hermione grumpily as they came out of Honeyduke's sweet shop later, eating large cream-filled chocolates. They think I'm talking to myself. Don't move your lips so much then. Come on, please just take off your cloak for a bit. No one's going to bother you here. Oh yeah, said Harry, look behind you. Rita Skeeter and her photographer friend had just emerged from the Three Broomsticks pub. Talking in low voices, they passed right by Hermione without looking at her. Harry backed into the wall of Honeydukes to stop Rita Skeeter from hitting him with her crocodile skin bag. When they were gone, Harry said, she's staying in the village. I bet she's coming to watch the first task. And as he said it, his stomach flooded with a wave of molten panic. He didn't mention this. He and Hermione hadn't discussed what was coming in the first task much. He had the feeling he didn't want to think about. She didn't want to think about it. She's gone, said Hermione, looking straight through Harry toward the end of the street. Why don't we go ahead and have a butter beer and the Three Broomsticks? It's a bit cold, isn't it? You don't have to talk to Ron. She added irritably, correctly interpreting his silence. The Three Broomsticks was packed, mainly with Hogwarts students enjoying the free afternoon, but also with a variety of magical people Harry rarely saw anywhere else. Harry supposed that his Hogsmeade was the only all-wizard village in Britain. It was a bit of a haven for creatures like hags, who were not as adept as wizards at disguising themselves. It was very hard to move through crowds in the invisibility cloak, in case you accidentally trod on someone, which tended to lead to awkward questions. Harry edged slowly toward a spare table in the corner while Hermione went to buy drinks. On his way through the pub, Harry spotted Ron, who was sitting with Fred George and Lee Jordan. Resisting the urge to give Ron a good hard poke in the back of the head, he finally reached the table and sat down at it. Hermione joined him a moment later and slipped him a butterbeer under his cloak. I look like such an idiot, sitting here on my own, she muttered. Lucky I brought something to do. She pulled out a notebook, in which she had been keeping a record of SPEW members. Harry saw his and Ron's name at the top of a very short list. It seemed a long time ago they had been set making up those predictions together, and Hermione had turned up and appointed them secretary and treasurer. You know, maybe I should try to get some of the villagers involved in SPEW, Hermione said thoughtfully, looking around the pub. Yeah, right, said Harry. He took a swig of butterbeer under his cloak. Hermione, when are you going to give up on the spew stuff? When house elves have decent wages and working conditions, she hissed back. You know, I'm starting to think if it's time for more direct action. I wonder how you get into the school kitchens. No idea, ask Fred and George, said Harry. Hermione lapsed into thoughtful silence while Harry drank his butterbeer, watching the people in the pub. All of them looked relaxed and cheerful. Ernie McMillan and Hannah Abbott were swapping chocolate frogs at a table nearby, both of them sporting Support Cedric Diggory badges on their cloaks. Right over by the door, he saw Cho and a large group of her Ravenclaw friends. She wasn't wearing a Cedric badge, though. This cheered up Harry very slightly. But he wouldn't have given to be one of those people sitting around laughing and talking with nothing to worry about but homework. He imagined how it would have felt to be here if his name hadn't come out of the Goblet of Fire. He wouldn't be wearing the invisibility cloak, for one thing. Ron would be sitting here with him, and the three of them would probably be happily imagining what deadly, dangerous task the school champions would be facing on Tuesday. He'd have been looking really forward to it, watching them do whatever it was, cheering on Cedric with everyone else, safe in his seat in the back of the stands. He wondered how the other champions were feeling. Every time he'd seen Cedric lately, he'd been surrounded by admirers and looking nervous but excited. Harry glimpsed Fleur de la Cour from time to time in the corridors. She looked exactly as she always did, haughty and unruffled. And Crumb just sat in the library, poring over books. Harry thought of Sirius and the tight, tense knot in his chest seemed to ease slightly. He would be speaking to him in just over 12 hours, for tonight was the night they were meeting at the common room fire, assuming nothing else went wrong, as everything else had been doing lately. Look, it's Hagrid, said Hermione. The back of Hagrid's enormous shaggy head He had mercifully abandoned his bunches, emerged over the crowd. Harry wondered why he hadn't spotted him at once, as Hagrid was so large, but standing up carefully, he saw Hagrid was leaning, talking to Professor Moody. Hagrid had his usual enormous tankard in front of him, but Moody was drinking from his hip flask. Madame Rosemerta, the pretty landlady, didn't seem to think much of this. She was looking askance at Moody as she collected glasses from the table around them. Perhaps she thought it was an insult to her mulled mead, but Harry knew better. Moody had told them all during their last defense against the dark arts lesson that he preferred to prepare his own food and drink at all times, as it was so easy for dark wizards to poison an unattended cup. Or he's drinking Polyjuice Potion, right, Pooh? As Harry watched, he saw Hagrid and Moody get up to leave. He waved, then remembered Hagrid couldn't see him. Moody, however, paused, his magical eye, on the corner where Harry was standing. He tapped Hagrid in the small of the back, being unable to reach his shoulder, muttered something to him, and then the pair of them made their way back across the pub towards Harry and Hermione's table. "All right, Hermione," said Hagrid loudly. "Hello," said Hermione, smiling back. Moody limped around the table and bent down. Harry thought he was reading the SPW notebook until he muttered, "Nice cloak, Potter." Harry stared at him in amazement. The large chunk missing from Moody's nose was particularly obvious at a few inches' distance. Moody grinned. Can you? "Yeah, I can see through invisibility cloaks," Moody said quietly. "It's come in useful at times, I can tell you." Hagrid was beaming down at Harry, too. Harry knew Hagrid couldn't see him, but Moody had obviously told Hagrid he was there. Hagrid bent down at the pretext of reading the SPW notebook as well, and said in a whisper so low that only Harry could hear, "Harry, meet me at midnight tonight in the cabin. Wear that cloak." Straightening up, Hagrid said loudly, "Nice to see you, Hermione," winked and departed. Moody followed him. "Why does Hagrid want me to meet him at midnight?" Harry said, very surprised. "Does he?" said Hermione, looking startled. "I wonder what he's up to." "I don't know whether you should go, Harry," she looked nervously and hissed. "It might make you late for Sirius." It was true that going down to Hagrid's at midnight would mean cutting his meeting with Sirius very fine indeed. Hermione suggested sending Hedwig down to Hagrid's to tell him he couldn't go, assuming, of course, that she would consent to take the note. Harry, however, thought it would just be better to be quick at whatever Hagrid wanted him for. He was very curious to know what this might be. Hagrid never asked Harry to visit him so late at night. I think we'll stop there. I love you so much, my kitten. I can't find our little thing out here. You're all curled up looking so cute. I love you so much. It's like, well, kitten. Good night.